Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Arsenal Özil, marca Mesut Özil, el envío al área, el remate, y ahí está el primer tanto del partido, no lo celebra por supuesto, Aaron Ramsey, 0-1 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Or afternoon, I should say, because it is afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Day. Yeah, we missed the morning, yeah.
I was out. How's
quite
it all going?
We were supposed to do morning, but I changed the time on account of being out quite late last night because I'm up in Edinburgh at the moment at the Edinburgh Fringe, which involves a lot of staying out drinking until quite late at night, to be honest.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Primarily. Yeah. There's some sort of artistic, you know, nonsense, but primarily it is drinking in student hovels until 4 a.m.
How are you?
It is. Yeah, it really is. How's everything with you? How was New York?
New York was pretty amazing, I have to say.
Yeah.
An incredibly fun place to be at the best of times, and then when you add in a whole load of Arsenal fans on top of that, it's super fun. We had an amazing book launch on the Friday night. Great to meet like loads and loads and loads of Arsenal fans from all over America. People gave me gifts of rum and bourbon.
Wow.
It was fantastic, really brilliant. And the guys over there from Arsenal NYC did a fantastic job in coordinating all the events that were going on between the book launch and art exhibition, you know, three pubs, just chock-a-block with Arsenal fans. It was like almost being at a home game. There were that many people around. And when you add all the splendor of New York on top of that, it's just very difficult to have a bad time. I feel quite spent now, though.
Really?
Yeah. Kind of exhausted.
I can imagine.
But hey, it's a
lots
good
of lots of emails. Lots of emails to catch up on. That's always fun.
Loads of emails. I haven't quite got on top of those yet, but because a lot's been happening.
Loads has gone on. You've missed out.
Yeah.
We've bought people.
Yeah.
What was it like being out of the... Were you a bit out of the loop on that count? Was that all sort of... Were you up to date with the news, or was it sort of filtering through bits and pieces, drips and drabs?
It was funny. At the book signing, we're about 2 hours into it, and somebody came up and was looking to get the book signed and said, you hear we've signed Callum Chambers? And I went, what? He said, yeah, we've got apparently a £16 million deal in place for Callum Chambers. So that was kind of how I got that news, which was cool. I thought that was a nice way to find out about something. But, you know, I could wake up and read what Tom was writing on Arsblog. And obviously with Twitter and everything else, it's not difficult to stay in the loop point of view.
That's a great way to hear about signing. That's quite retro, isn't it? You don't get that anymore.
Yeah, did you hear? What are you talking about? And then it just started going around. People were going, wow, Callum Chambers, blah, blah, blah. It was word of mouth, literally, throughout O'Hanlon's on 14th Street. And a really interesting signing as well, because I'm not sure what he's going to do with him. The potential for Arsene Wenger to do a lot with Callum Chambers is pretty obvious, isn't it? I mean, where do you think he's going to play him, because people are talking about him being center half. People are talking about him perhaps being groomed for a central midfield role. He plays a right back. He's very versatile, but you just have the idea that Arsene Wenger's got something specific in mind for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. Chambers himself, when he signed, said, you know, listed those three positions, center half, right back and holding midfield, that Wenger had spoken to him about in conversation. And what Chambers said was, I'm looking forward to sort of seeing which one suits me best and which one I can progress in the most. So it's possible that there isn't a specific plan, but I do think that one of the big attractions was that ability to play potentially at right back. Well, and
there's
at centre-back.
Night catching up with you.
There you go. There you go. There'll be a lot of that this month, I have to say. So I'm sorry, everyone at home. But I think that, I think it's the fact that he can play at right back, but also at centre back. And we lost that versatility when we lost Sanya. And if Enger thinks that Chambers can do both those jobs, it gives him a lot more options in the squad. And I think he's obviously got one eye on Vermaelen potentially leaving as well. So he's thinking about filling in that centre back spot. I think this season we'll probably primarily see him at right back because that's where all his Premier League experience to date has been. But it wouldn't surprise me if in some games he gets a chance at centre half too. I think holding midfield's, as we've discussed, quite congested already. I think it's going to take a pretty big player to come in and walk straight into the team in that part of the park. That's not to say we couldn't do with one. So I think it'll be at the back that we see Chambers more often. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so, probably. But, I'm open to the endless possibilities of what Arsene Wenger can do with a player, particularly one whose position and whose abilities aren't necessarily fully formed, so he can mould him into whatever he likes.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of the attraction, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like great raw materials.
Yeah, precisely. What did you make of the Morgan Schneiderlin tweet during the week, in that, a lot of people said he was pissed off that he couldn't get a move to Tottenham, but do you think there's any chance he could have been pissed off that he wasn't allowed to move to us?
I don't know, maybe he was pissed off because he thought he was going to Tottenham. I think I don't know. I mean, so there was a lot of talk around the time of the Chambers deal kind of being finalised that we would talking about Schneiderlin as well, potentially. I think Ben Smith at the BBC said that Arsenal, wanted to take Schneiderlin too if they could. Then there were these reports that Schneiderlin wanted to play with Pochettino, he wanted to go to Tottenham. I'd be very surprised if we weren't fishing around that area. He's a player that Wenger will have known about for a long time. I think their hometowns are only a few miles apart.
They're both Alsatians.
Indeed, they are. And when Schneiderlin first came over to Southampton, a long time ago now, there was a series of stories suggesting that he was kind of there as a feeder club and that he would be joining Arsenal within 1 or 2 years. I mean, that all turned out to be nonsense, but I think the fact that he was French alone at that time sparked that speculation.
I remember that. I think there were actual stories saying that we were going to sign him, and then all of a sudden he went to Southampton.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So I think there was always some sort of, link there. And it seems he's someone who's been on Wenger's radar at the very least. I think if it all goes, tits up between Schneiderlin and Southampton, and hopefully Southampton get into a position where they're unhappy with Spurs and decide they don't want to sell to them, I think it'd be great if we could pounce in and nab him off. I know I'm setting myself up for a fall when he eventually joins Tottenham, but I think he'd be a really good addition if it's something we can do.
Yeah.
Would you like him at Arsenal? Or?
Yeah, he kind of fits the profile, doesn't he? He's good in that role. He's younger than either Arteta and Flamini, and that's something we've obviously got to bear in mind, if not this season, certainly next. He does look like a player who could step up in terms of his performance level if you put him in a better team.
I mean, his numbers are very good. His stats are very good. I have to say, when I watch Southampton, he's not someone I notice enormously, but I think...
But maybe that's due to the efficiency of what he does.
Indeed. It's the old invisible wall thing, like Gilberto Silva. And I have to say, I went to Southampton for the 2-2 game in January, and I saw Callum Chambers play that night as a right back. And at that point, I had no idea who he was, really. 19-year-old kid, he'd just broken into the first team. I think maybe 18 at the time. And he was absolutely outstanding that night. Mm. And I remember leaving with a distinct impression that this guy was a serious player. There were a couple of moments where he was sort of dribbling into our penalty box, causing real, real problems, and very solid defensively. And in the light of that I think it's a really exciting signing. And it's the sort of deal that, we know Wenger wanted Jones. We know he wanted Smalling. He's been looking to sign
that kind of player, yeah.
exactly that kind of player, promising English talent, versatile, powerful defenders, someone he can develop, someone who can be at the club for the next decade. And he's got one now, and I think it's a terrific piece of business. Really excited to see him in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah, funny as well. I mean, he's the third to come from Southampton in that kind of a deal, a player who's barely made an impact in the Southampton first team, but we've spotted the potential, gone in with the right amount of money, and brought them on board.
Yeah.
So I think that's a credit to the Southampton Academy as much as our scouting, but just interesting all the same.
Well, we've spent, 40 million odd on those three. I wonder how much we could just buy the Academy for. It's obviously pretty good.
Yeah, make them an offer for their infrastructure. That could work.
Yeah.
David Ospina has come in as the number two goalkeeper to start off with. Again, a really interesting signing, because we've spoken about this before, perhaps a trend for clubs to have two really competitive goalkeepers rather than a very obvious number one and a second choice. I mean, I have to admit, I'm blind to what Ospina did before the World Cup. He impressed in Brazil, but, it's very difficult to make any kind of assessment or judgment on him. But given his profile, given his age, he is going to want to play first-team football. Wojciech Szczęsny is going to want to play first-team football. So there's a real fight there for the number one.
There really is. And, this is a signing we knew was coming for some time, but not like the Chambers deal in that respect. But when it happened, it was great looking at Twitter and seeing, fans of other clubs, a lot of journalists sitting up and saying, wow, that's a coup.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And that's a bit of a statement from Arsenal, that they're not prepared to rest on their laurels or let any player, be in the side without stiff competition. And I think that's a good thing. We saw how well Szczęsny played last season, and I have no doubt that that's in some part down to how well Fabianski was playing whenever he got the chance. I think it kept Szczęsny on his toes, and Ospina will do the same. I'm convinced he'll come here with ambitions of being the number one. Mm. He'll recognise that he won't start the season as number one, but any opportunity he gets, he'll be looking to fight to stay in that team. So it can only be a good thing, really, and whoever comes out on top, it will be for the benefit of Arsenal.
It does, though, if one player very obviously comes out on top, result in an unhealthy situation for the other. And that then becomes a problem if you've got two goalkeepers that want to play first-team football. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Arsene Wenger manages this, because I don't think it's a situation he's ever had at Arsenal. He's always had a very obvious number one. Perhaps in the Almunia years, it wasn't as clear-cut, particularly when he dropped Lehmann. But, it's been Seaman. When Manninger came in and did well, it didn't matter because Seaman came straight back in. So I think it's going to be quite interesting to see how this one plays out and how he deals with it.
I think it's difficult to manage in the longer term. I think, you can get away with it for a season, maybe even a couple of seasons, keeping someone unhappy, keeping someone on the bench. But it's not something that's going to last, for 5 or 10 years. Players won't accept that.
Yeah.
However, signing of Callum Chambers aside, a lot of Wenger's recent deals have seemed a little less with the long term in mind. I think he recognises that the club needs to deliver success now. And I think, Ospina's arrival, hopefully, will push us towards doing that.
Carl Jenkinson has gone out on loan. I don't think anybody's particularly surprised by that, but how do you view this loan? Is it a chance for him to play regularly, develop and come back to Arsenal, or is it the first part of how a player inevitably moves away from a club when they've got better options?
I mean, I want to believe, and Arsenal.com were quite clear. They said he's gone out on loan to gain experience of regular first-team football. I want to believe that's the case, and I want to believe he comes back, because I love Carl Jenkinson as much as any other Arsenal fan. If I'm brutally honest, I do suspect that it feels a bit like, those relationships that aren't working out when they go on a break. And you kind of think, I'm not sure that break's ever going to end.
Yeah.
It wouldn't blow my mind if Jenkinson doesn't come back to Arsenal. I kind of feel like that the move he's made to West Ham, that might be his level, and he might say to himself, after a season of regular first team football, maybe I don't want to go back and sit on the bench, however much I might love Arsenal. I'm a professional first and foremost.
Yeah.
And I want to play games. I don't think anyone necessarily knows how this will pan out. I'm not sure the player knows or the manager. I think it's kind of a wait and see how you develop, see how you feel and see what position we're in at Arsenal, how Debuchy and Chambers are managing.
Yeah.
What's your gut instinct?
My gut instinct is that it's probably curtains. But, you know, like you and like many people, I'd really like him to come back. I just feel that if they thought he was up for the fight now against, let's say, a 29-year-old Debuchy, they wouldn't have brought in a 19-year-old with even less experience at right back than he has.
Yeah.
But again, as I pointed out in the blog today, Debuchy's not a long-term player for Arsenal. You know, three seasons, maybe four. And if Jenkinson performs to a very high level, then perhaps he's the guy who can come back and then start to compete properly with Debuchy for the right back spot while Chambers moves perhaps to centre half or to a central midfield position, depending on what Arsene Wenger wants to do with him. So, yeah, I think it's very difficult to be definitive about what happens. And like you, I think much will depend on how he performs. But, yeah, it doesn't always augur well when a player goes out on loan at his age. You know, he's not exactly at 17 or 18 where you want them to get a little bit of experience so they can then come back for first team. You know, he's been around a bit. So, and yeah. In a way, I feel a bit not sorry for him because, you know, it's a professional game. And but he obviously does love Arsenal in a big way and has a real connection with the fans. So I think it's not like any other player going out on loan because he wears his heart in his sleeve so much, you know.
So,
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Chambers is a few years younger and sort of has immediately jumped above him in the pecking order, as you say, it doesn't augur particularly well. But we'll see. Perhaps we'll have a storming season and we'll get back a much better player in 12 months' time.
Yeah, well, that would be good for everyone. Right, okay, well, that's it for part one. We're going to take a short break. We're right back with part two after this. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. Time for the questions that you sent to us both at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog on Twitter with the hashtag Arscast Extra. And the first one this week, James, comes from Rohan Tejwani. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And he asks, do you think four preseason games are enough for Arsenal? They played seven last summer and six during the summer of the last World Cup. So what do you reckon?
It feels very sparse as a schedule, doesn't it? It feels very, very light. I think the better comparison. So what, give me those numbers again.
Seven six. Last summer and six during the summer of the last World Cup. Now, I can't guarantee that those numbers are correct. I'm just taking it that Rohan knows what he's talking about here, given how well-informed our listeners are.
Yeah, he sounds like a guy who does. I'm prepared to take him at face value.
Yeah,
and I mean, it kind of has to be enough because it's what we've got. I don't think it's been an ideal preseason, though. You know, as great as the trip to New York was, especially for the fans, you know, it was quite a hectic few days of activity for the players and only the one game over in the States. They've been in Austria this week on a little bit of a training camp, but even that feels very fleeting, you know, 3 or 4 days together out there. So I'm a little bit concerned that we might be a little bit behind in our preparation. I think we're going to have to use, obviously, the Community Shield, factor that in.
Well, I mean, but that's all it is anyway, is a preseason game.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that's primarily about getting the fitness up. And I think there'll be a couple of players who, as we've talked about before, come the first game of the season, won't be at 100%.
Yeah.
But I kind of think that with the World Cup having happened, that was always going to be the case. I don't really see another way around it. You know, we could have played more games, but you have to hope that the sports science guys at Arsenal have sort of done their calculations and they have made a decision based on the, you know, the optimum requirements to get people ready.
Could it be that perhaps the introduction of this new miracle worker, Shad Forsyth, has had an impact on this? That perhaps maybe we're playing too many preseason friendlies in summer's past?
Do you think a physio at a football club, I'm not sure physio is the correct, you know, title for him, has ever received quite so much attention as Shad Forsyth has at Arsenal?
No, it's incredible, but I think that's reflective of the problems that we had with injuries and fitness and people's... Well, obviously, I think everybody knows everything about the Arsenal medical setup and how they work and what they do and what they don't do and quite why they haven't paid attention to this point, I'm not sure, but you know, it's just interesting that he appears to have been as welcomed as a signing as any of the new players that we've got.
But I worry for him. I think there's probably more pressure on Shad than there is on Alexis Sanchez. if he doesn't deliver, the fans won't be happy. They'll be calling for a new physio come the January transfer window.
Yeah,
even on a budget. Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
No, but he'll be fine. You know, first player that gets injured, he'll just, you know, lay hands on them and they'll be walking again. It'll be a miracle. he's got a brilliant new setup. He's got a Bible preacher's tent at London Colney. That's how he does it. The players walk in, injured, he comes, hallelujah, and they're fixed. That's how it works. That's science, baby.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, since he's arrived, I believe I'm right in saying Naby Diaby has been available for selection.
Every day.
Do the maths.
Mm. Interesting, I was speaking to the press office this morning about Johan Juru, about his situation and why he's still listed on the Arsenal website. And the expectation is that he is going to go to Hamburg, but the intricacies of the deal haven't yet been finalised, which is why it hasn't been announced and he's still there. But it was mentioned to me that Per Mertesacker could well be used on the opening day of the season, from the very opening day of the season, despite the fact that he doesn't get back from his break until August the 11th. So
I think part of the reason for that, apparently, is that Per has a reputation for being extremely good at looking after himself, even when he's not training with the first team. I think he has, you know, sort of personal fitness coaches and the like that he employs to keep him in tip-top condition sort of all year round.
He's very supple.
He is indeed, yeah. Well, we know from his Twister death matches. But because actually Wenger was slightly misquoted on this. So there were some quotes a couple of weeks ago where he said the Germans won't be ready for the start of the season. But he actually before said, I think that he thinks there's a 90% chance that Mertesacker will. It's the other Germans who he's worried about. Now, that's partly, as we say, because, you know, Per does look after himself very well. But is it also slightly born out of desperation and our need for him? Mm. We've not got a tremendous amount of other options at centre-half if Thomas Vermaelen isn't, you know, considered for selection, which may be the case, it seems.
He is still struggling with the effects of a hamstring injury. Now, whether that's a hamstring injury or a hamstring injury.
Are you doing the fingers?
I'm doing the fingers. We should make this part of vidcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, So I don't quite know. I think he did have an injury problem going into the World Cup, but when there's that much speculation about a player's future and they're sidelined through injury, you know, there's always that question mark, isn't there? So
yeah, I mean, his World Cup was ended by injury, was it not? I think I seem to remember him coming off. He got a start in such and such a game, and then he came off maybe for Vertonghen. But yeah, so you know, there could be truth in that. Remains to be seen, really. But yeah, I do wonder if Mertesacker will be hurried back slightly quicker than the others, simply because
we'll
need
soon
him.
Find out. We'll soon find out. It's only a couple of weeks away.
Yeah.
Right then.
Next question.
Yeah.
This comes from Rob at Rob Reggie, and he asks on the subject of Callum Chambers, is £16 million too much of a gamble for Chambers, and could the money have been better spent elsewhere?
Well, I think it is always a gamble when you spend £16 million on a teenager who's only played X amount of games, but as we spoke about earlier, Arsene Wenger's track record, particularly in doing that with Southampton, is quite good. Mm-hmm. You'd have to say so. You'd need to trust his judgment on that one, and maybe £16 million over the course of a 10-year Arsenal career or whatever it might be, people will look back and go, "Wow, what a bargain!" Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it can obviously go both ways. Whether it could have been better spent elsewhere, that remains to be seen as well, because we don't know whether or not we're finished spending, what we've got left to do in the transfer market. So I'm not at this point, given the fact that we've long bemoaned the club's lack of spending at times, to be critical when we do spend. So to me, I'm just really happy with everything that's going on and what we've been doing so far. So I don't want to like think about it from a negative point of view. And that's not just being happy clappy. It's just kind of how I feel about it.
I feel the same way. And also, I think that with these younger players, I feel like those investments are almost a separate pot. You know, I remember in 2011, in the summer, everyone was calling for us to go and buy experienced players. And there was a little bit of anger when we spent about £15 million on Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. And people were saying, you know, why are the club investing money in a kid? We need first-team players. Mm. But you have to do those deals too. You have to look at the longer term, the bigger picture. And Wenger's excellent at doing that. And I think, you know, sometimes these investments, they might seem pricey at the time, but as you say, over the course of several years of service, they start to look like real value. Mm. And you've got to remember the same summer, Southampton got twice that fee for their other fullback, Luke Shaw. So, you know, I think £16 million, I'm not going to say it's going to look a bargain, but I think it might look like good value in a few years' time.
Yeah, I think so too, particularly in light of the Shaw deal. And I don't know if it was you or somebody that I noticed on Twitter while I was away talking about how Southampton fans were much more upset to lose Chambers than Shaw. So. Mm. All right.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Here's a question. It comes from at SidKHare88. And in the light of some stories that did emerge last week, he wants to know, is Jack Wilshere a realistic option for a DM?
The mythical DM.
Yeah.
Do I think Jack Wilshere can play as essentially as our deepest line midfielder? Yes, he can. How good will he be at it? I'm not sure. I feel like he has some of the attributes. You know, he'd be great at starting off the play. He's certainly tenacious. Doesn't mind a challenge. But he's got you'd have a huge amount to learn on the positional side of the game. The kind of, you know, All those canny little tricks that make a good holding midfielder, and knowing when to cover your fullback, knowing when to sit and hold, you know, when you can afford to break forward and when you can't. That's not something he has in his game yet. And I think if Arsenal were to try and put him through that process, there would be teething problems, and that could prove costly. And I'm not sure that would necessarily bring the best out of him as a player. I still think at heart he's got great attacking instincts and great creative gifts, and I feel like if we're going to see the best of Wilshere, it's going to be in a position much like Aaron Ramsey, where he can use those and make the most of those. So For me, no, I'd rather see someone who's a specialist come in. What do you reckon on that one?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think he could certainly do a job if you're playing with two men in that position. Not necessarily one holding midfielder, but two slightly holding midfielders. But yeah. On his own, I think that job would be just too much for him. I don't think he would cope aerially at all because he's not that big. And he doesn't strike me as somebody who wins a lot of headers. No doubt somebody will pull out the stats on that one and prove me wrong. But no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think he's better going forward than he is defensively. As much as he does like to tackle and get stuck in, he doesn't always do that well either. He can be a bit foully. So, no, not for me. And it would be a big surprise for me if that was something Arsene Wenger was considering.
Cool. Okay, well, let's have the next question. It is from Akib Alias, and he asks, since it's Kanu's birthday today, probably 70-odd, what is your favourite moment of his?
Easy. The goal against Deportivo La Coruña.
Correct. That's the correct answer.
Where
everyone
he
at
just
home.
Headed it and then sort of had the ball at his feet and didn't touch it again and just dummied it past the keeper. Just the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen on a football pitch. Just because I don't quite understand how he did it or how the goalkeeper fell for it or anything, but just sublime, really.
Yeah. I absolutely adored Kanu, I have to say. He's really one of my all-time favourite Arsenal players. He just did things that blew your mind. Mm. Immediately, that goal's the first that comes to mind, but then I also think of the goal against Middlesbrough, the kind of back flick from the corner of the box. The hat-trick at Stamford Bridge, let's not forget.
Well, that was just an amazing thing. I mean... Yeah. I don't know how, you know, have we seen that since? Ever?
I don't know,
I mean,
nothing like that.
We've seen some good comebacks, haven't we? You know, think of the game against Bolton. We were down to 10 men. I think we came back to win 3-2. Some Catalan bloke scored the winner. The 7-5 in the Capital One Cup. But for one player, what was there, 15 minutes to go?
Yeah.
To do that, like amazing. That. Yeah, that goal against Tottenham as well, where he flicked it over Luke Young.
That was a great goal. I don't know who it was, but whoever it was looked rather silly by the end of it. It just had unbelievable talent. Mm. You know, and there were a few quips about his age and what have you, but it didn't matter at all because he was just extraordinarily gifted. And... you forget it was a massive gamble when we took him as well. He'd had heart problems, hadn't he, at Inter Milan. But what a signing he turned out to be. We've not seen many players with that kind of natural flair for the game.
Yeah.
But that Deportivo goal was like magic, really. Probably magic stuff. So happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Kanu. Thanks for that. I mean, you just can't look at it and not laugh at that goal. And actually, I think there's a... on the video, if you can find it, I think they replay it on the screen and you just hear people laughing because they weren't quite aware of what he'd done in real time. But when you see the replay, you just hear people laughing. Amazing.
It's like a Jedi goal, isn't it?
Right, here's a question from Lasse Hammer. And he wants to know, why are there no young centre-backs coming through at Arsenal that could be promoted to third or fourth choice?
Good question. I mean, so there's been a few training with the first team this summer. Semi Ajayi, Isaac Hayden, who we've seen playing midfield in the first team a couple of times. Obviously, Ignacy Mikel, who we're a bit more familiar with. I think that it's difficult to see any of them breaking into the squad this season because, in part, of the arrival of Callum Chambers. Had we bought, just one more experienced defender...
Mm.
And lost for Marlon. So if you had Mertesacker, Koscielny, an experienced new signing, I could see somebody like Hayden filling that fourth centre-back spot. But I think that's going to be Chambers' role as well as cover for Debussy. So I think if Marlon goes, he'll probably be replaced by someone with more experience than Chambers. So I don't see it happening. And I guess it must just speak to Wenger's assessment of the players. I don't think he's someone who's loath to use young players. You know, we know he loves to work with young talent. He's happy to sign players who bring players in who've got a lot to learn still if he believes in their potential. He must just think the guys we've got either aren't ready or aren't good enough. And I think at centre-back, it's a position where you can't afford to take too many gambles. And he's been burnt. He's been burnt by that before. You know, you think of Yaya Juru, Philippe Senderos, when they were coming through, inevitably out of inexperience, they made mistakes. And perhaps he feels that that's not something he can afford right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a difficult position to learn as well, because every mistake generally proves very costly.
Yeah. Like goalkeeper. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, he's blooded someone like Chesney. I watched Hayden in the game against New York Red Bulls. Mm. He played the first half at center half alongside Nacho Monreal. Mm. He looks like he could probably do a job there. Looked comfortable on the ball. Pretty quick, good in the air. So I wonder if he might be in and around the squad or perhaps loaned out to give him a season of experience, because I think they do think quite highly of him. So
yeah, I mean,
I think with somebody like Mikel, who last season was sent out on loan to get that experience and only ended up playing 12 times for Leicester, I think that tells you as much as you need to know about him. So, or his chances, even, I should say. Without being clear. Okay, one more from you.
One more. Okay, this comes from SuperArse710. And he asks, how many more signings do you expect this summer?
Two.
You came out with that quite quickly and quite definitively. Do you want to explain?
I don't know why. I think a centre-half. Mm. I think we've got to have a centre-half. And I think that we might just get the midfielder. That's what I think. So I'm, you know, I'm being quite happy and positive about everything we've done. I think we'll probably sign two more players, but I don't rule out those two players coming in while perhaps two more go out, if you know what I mean. So we could sign a centre half and sell Vermaelen, and we could buy a midfielder and sell a midfielder or move a midfielder on. I wonder if anyone out there has taken notice. I can't remember what we said we'd spend our net spend.
Oh, they have.
Remember we did that?
They definitely have taken notice, because I've had some stick about it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't remember what I said.
I don't remember exactly what I said. I thought we'd put them in like a Brendan Rodgers style sealed envelope that we were going to reveal at the end of the transfer window.
I did write it down. I remember at the time writing it down. But
I mean, the great things about podcasts is it is out there. Like, you know, we can dig it out. We'll find it.
Well, I can, because I can't remember what episode it was in or anything like that. So,
All right. Well, look, if anyone does remember, maybe tweet it to us.
Yeah.
Don't make it up. You know.
You said we were 350.
I mean, we're wrong enough as it is, you know. Because I think we were quite conservative. I think we were kind of in the 40
to 50
bracket.
Million pound, yeah.
Mm, which, you know, at the moment is we're sort of we're over that. But as you say,
we've got till the end of August
for all the players to leave. Yeah. But I think,
what do you reckon? How many more?
At least one. I think there's definitely one more.
Yeah.
That's because I think Thomas Vermaelen will leave, and I think we will have to sign another centre back. I don't think I'd feel confident enough to have Chambers as the third choice centre-half, given his lack of experience, however talented he might be.
Agree.
So I think there'll be a centre-half, and I think there may be a midfielder. There may be a midfielder. There's still talk about Schneiderlin. There's still talk about Khedira. I don't know. We shall see. Well, that'll be one to watch. I think both of those transfers could drag out a little bit wherever they end up going.
You think we're done up front?
I do, and I have thought that for some time. Yeah,
same. All right. Okay, final question this week comes from Ollie Pierce, at Ollie Pierce. And he says, what would you rather live with? Massive hands which are three times bigger than normal, or no hair at all on your person?
Interesting.
Mm.
I think I'm going to have to go no hair. I mean, I'm halfway there already. I think, I'm going to go no hair. Because, to be honest, the lack of required upkeep appeals to me. I feel like there'd be something convenient about it.
Yeah,
you know, I just...
True. No grooming?
Wouldn't have to, no grooming of any kind.
No unclotting or, you know...
No unclotting, no shaving, no shampooing.
Uh-huh.
Just a sort of sleek figure. And the massive hands thing, I can only see that becoming problematic.
Yeah, I don't see any upside to having massive hands unless you're going to be a boxer. And I've spent, I have to say, most of my life avoiding situations where other people can punch me in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see any reason to be punched in the face. And I don't see any reason to punch anyone else in the face, really, either. But maybe if you had massive hands, it would, yeah, change your opinion. But yeah, it would be really difficult, of course, to do normal things with your massive hands, like a keyboard or send a text message, because, you know.
I mean, I have that problem with an iPhone already, to be honest.
Yeah.
I have, you know, clumsy thumbs. I struggle. And so with massive hands, it would be a nightmare. My text messages would be incomprehensible, for one.
Mm.
Whereas I feel like the hairlessness thing, I just feel like it wouldn't bother me enormously.
Yeah. And look, if you wanted hair, you could get some. You could get a nice wig. You could change your hairstyle daily if you liked.
That could does appeal as well.
That's pretty cool, because one day you could have really, really long hair, and the next you could have a big Mohican. And, you know, of course, you could get a, you know, if you were feeling in the mood, you could get a good Merkin for down there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've already got a few, but I feel like they'd get more use if I was hairless. So I'm going for that one.
All right, then. Well, on that note, we shall leave it
there. On that revelatory note.
Yeah, just a reminder that if you're going to the Emirates Cup this weekend, you can pick up copies of the Arseblog book together, the story of Arsenal's unbeaten season in the Tollington, because no doubt you'll be drinking in there in the Tollington before the game. You can pick up books from behind the bar. They're all signed. You continue to have a good time in Edinburgh.
I will do. I hope you recover from your New York exertions.
Indeed, and we shall do this again at some point next week.
Good stuff.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.